breakfast. Lunch. I said lunch, not lunch!
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to Pod Stallions, the official podcast of Plaid Stallions. I'm Brian, and with me, as always, is Jason.
Hello, everybody.
And we're talking tonight about something that I think is pretty seminal for Gen X, 70s kids, and that is the work of Sid and Marty Krofft. I know I'm a humongous fan. I don't know about you, Jason, but I think it's hard to find something you didn't like as a kid in their repertoire.
Yes, it's more so that I am more of like an armchair fan, and I like the stuff.
I like to sit in an armchair when I watch it.
I like the stuff, and I respect the stuff. I'm not sure if I've ever owned any of it.
Really?
I don't know if I would. Maybe I did. Maybe I did. Might have owned Sigmund and the Sea Monsters at one point or another because of the madness of it and Rip Taylor. But they are. Across the board, they are some of my earliest television memories. Certainly live-action stuff has to be the Krofft stuff, especially when you start, you know, throwing in the dates that things premiered.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
When they first went up and, like, maybe they got repeated, you know, a few months later or whatever. But if you start to look at the short window that some of these things would have been up, that I would have seen them, and I would have been 4 or 5 years old. So it's definitely a very, very early television experience, the start of Sid and Marty Krofft.
Yeah, I think one of my earliest, there's a famous website called Kinder Trauma, and
yes.
One of my Kinder Trauma moments would be that boat from H.R. Puff and Stuff transforming into an evil boat, and the hands coming up and grabbing Jimmy, that scared the crap out of me. And then, you know, Puff and Stuff in general, I think it was a little terrifying for
a
2-year-old or however old I was.
It was a bit of a visual overdose.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because if you had been currently overdosing on several different drugs, the show would have been a lot better.
Yeah, well they've addressed that. The Krofts, who are, by the way, good Canadians.
That's right.
They claim they were never heavy drug guys, and this really came to a head when Mr. Show did that wonderful parody in the 90s.
What was it? The Land
Drugachusetts.
Drugachusetts.
Yeah, which has Tom Kenny as
United States of Drugachusetts.
Yeah, and I mean that is really a brilliant parody, and what we're all thinking. But I think it has a lot to do with the fact that these guys were really crazy with the colors and the designs, and very, very. Very big on the art side of things.
Well, I think that they probably... Okay. I'm not trying to sound like a narc here, okay? But I think that at a certain time in the 70s, at a certain innocent time, early, mid-70s still, you know, saying, like, we weren't big druggies, you know, that could kind of mean... You know, we like to drink occasionally, and we smoked weed, but we weren't big druggies. Like smoking weed was kind of like, you know, I'm not sure if it was seen as that. Was it that big of a deal back then?
I think it was.
Was it?
When you're working in children's programming, maybe?
Well, no, I mean, yes. What I mean is there were probably loads of sets. Children's shows, the set of MASH, you know, WKRP, where it was probably pretty prominent behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
it was the 70s, you know, and then eventually by the late 70s, it was, you know, cocaine on the sets and stuff. So what I'm saying is to kind of find a couple guys that, you know, were totally clean to make anything. The question is whether they used any of the, you know, sort of pot-induced, you know, thoughts or visions to enhance some of these creatures.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe they did. I think it's more fun thinking about it if they did. But on the other hand, you know, the Monty Python team always for, you know, 50 years have been asked, you know, so how much, what kind of drugs did you guys do back then? Like, how did you come up with? And they're like, no, we didn't do anything. We didn't do anything. We couldn't do anything. We couldn't function if we did to write this stuff.
Yeah.
And make these sketches. But people, it's got such a surreal vibe to it that people assume there was, you know,
yeah,
drugs involved. And I think that's the same thing with the a lot of the Croft stuff, because it's so weird,
mm-hmm,
and so left of center. It falls into the category of surreal, and then you get into things like I Am the Walrus and Strawberry Fields and, you know, Salvador Dali. And
they were definitely catching the zeitgeist of the psychedelic era.
And yes, putting
it, you know, like these guys. I didn't know this, but well, I guess I maybe did. But they had a design hand in the Banana Splits. They weren't the producers, but they had the design hand in that.
Okay.
Their first television product that I can really see is H.R. Puff and Stuff, which they also spun out into a movie, and it's probably their benchmark creation, I think.
It was pretty big for a time. It was a big show.
Yeah, it was, and I mean I knew that show as a kid, and I don't know how much of it I watched, but it was around.
But you know too, with that, sometimes a sign of that is the merchandise. There was a lot of merchandise made for H.R. Puff and Stuff.
There was a ton of it. Remco did some puppets. There's of course the obligatory lunchbox. I'm probably missing a lot of the stuff that they did, but yeah, it was a bit of a cash cow in that regard too.
Well, the one thing that I want, that I hope to get before I die, because it's a cereal premium, is, you know, little Freddy the Flute.
The Freddy the Flute.
Yeah. Freddy the Flute.
Yeah.
I want to get him. He was like a cereal mail away.
He was, and you see those, and I think you can sometimes get them for $50, but of course when you go on eBay, somebody's got one, they want like $400 for it. You know,
right.
That's the only one you see for 6 months until someone lists another one and they get an honest price for it. So.
Right.
Yeah. I don't really have a... I kind of think Puff and Stuff is cool, and I definitely remember realizing, I think it was my wife and I, well, my girlfriend and I at the time, were renting videos in college, and we went into the Blockbuster, and we rented H.R. Puff and Stuff, the movie, and the clerk started, I think he might have had some issues, but he started doing the dance and the song when we rented it. And I remember thinking, wow, hey, this was a lot bigger than I remember it, you know.
It was. The song, everybody knows the song. Just mm-hmm. like when you mentioned Josie and the Pussycats, everybody knows the theme song. Everyone knows the song of Puff and Stuff. I think they know the song of the Bugaloos as well.
Yeah, you know, it's a little less, I think. But yeah, as you go on, there's certain high points that...
I mean, Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, I remember that theme tune. I remember the tune for Land of the Lost. They all had very catchy theme tunes.
Yeah.
And it's because they ran so long and got repeated or something. I don't know. Because when I think about the, you know, I start thinking about stuff that I was there for the launch. You know, Dr. Shrinker, Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, Captain Cool and the Kongs, you know, that kind of stuff. I was there when it launched. But going back to the earlier ones, I can't tell if I was there first run for Land of the Lost or it was like still being repeated in 76 and 77, and that's when I was seeing it, you know?
Yeah, that one I remember definitely watching firsthand, Land of the Lost, but I do remember, I think it was probably when I was in the sixth grade, a channel in Rochester started doing this syndicated package called The World of Sid and Marty Croft or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't know what you were going to get, so you would run home and watch... like Lidsville one day, and then I was doing it for Land of the Lost. I wanted to catch all of Land of the Lost again, but then of course I didn't mind Electra Woman and Dinah Girl or any of those other programs, but it was a mixed bag. It was just this kind of like random, you get a show today, you don't know what it is. So I got really caught up on those shows when I was about 11 or 12, so I think most of my strong memories come from that. just before the VCR days.
Well, I remember a couple of things that come to mind. I kind of remember Puffin stuff. Bugaloos, I seem to recall more maybe when it was repeated than initial run.
Yeah.
And having
it's crush. Very set in like 72, you know.
Yes, and I had a big crush on
Carolyn Ellis.
One of the, I think that must have been her. That must have been one I had a crush on.
Well, the only other woman on that show was Martha Ray.
Oh, it was Martha Ray.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the big mouth. Yeah.
That was something. And Lidsville, I don't have much of a recall on. Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. This will tell you something about me and about even back then. Two things that you like coming together, how it could blow my mind. You know, I always make the reference to sitting in the theater, seeing the trailer for Flash Gordon, the movie.
Yeah.
And hearing Queen.
Yeah.
And going, is that, wait a minute. They're making a Flash Gordon movie and they asked Queen to do the music?
So
what?
I just can't figure out what two things you liked about Sigmund and the Sea Monsters that came together.
Well, Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, it was like, okay, I'm digging this show. You know, it's like, it's kind of fun. These kids are going to hang out with these monsters, and it's kind of goofy. I mean, we laughed at it, probably. You recognize little Johnny Whitaker. I remember him as the kid. I mean, even then, I knew he was an older version of the kid.
From Family Affair.
Family Affair.
Yeah.
With the great Brian Keith, who killed himself with a shotgun.
Did he really?
Yeah. Put a shotgun in his mouth.
Well, this is dark.
He wasn't messing around.
Yeah, no, that gets the job done. Yeah,
That's how Hardcastle, Hardcase went out.
Oh my!
That's how he chose to go. So one day I'm watching Sigmund and the Sea Monsters, and you know sometimes they do little montages to songs.
Yeah.
And they would be covers of songs. They're doing a montage to "Got to Get You Into My Life" by the Beatles. And I just kind of went, what? Like, were the Beatles part of this or something? Did they go in and do this? Like, it doesn't quite sound like the Beatles, but whatever. But I just thought it was cool that they used that song in their little montage of running around. I thought, oh, the Beatles, you know, meet Sigmund and the Sea Monsters.
That's kind of cool. I never realized that. Okay, I was really wondering where you were going with that, because I was like, are you that big a Family Affair man and Wizard of Oz?
Yes,
because Margaret Hamilton was the maid,
I'm
a housekeeper.
Big Sebastian Cabot. I have all of his movies.
His spoken word records, they are
spoken
amazing.
Word records, his movies, yeah. The Sebastian Cabot Hot Toys 12-inch action figure.
Was he a killer on Columbo? I can't remember.
He probably was. He fits the mold of, you know, if Shatner was a killer on Columbo, then Sebastian Cabot probably was.
Yeah.
You know, all those guys. Marjo Gortner.
Yeah, Martin Landau's twins. And,
Martin
yeah.
Landau, Barbara Bain, they showed up.
Oh, yeah, he was in Dagger of the Mind. Okay, he was in Columbo. Okay.
See? Told
yeah.
you. So I got to say, Lost Saucer.
Yeah, well, let's not jump around here, because I would love to just touch on them chronologically.
All right, so you want to do my plan?
Well, the Boogaloos was second, I think, which we talked about. It's a weird kind of show. They're kind of capitalizing on Britpop. I never realized. I was watching all of these with my daughter last night, who's sick, and I don't think is feeling any better from some of these shows.
You probably put her into a coma.
I think it's Sparky. The little bug the Boogaloos hang out with. I never realized how much that looks like the kid from Bad Santa. I want to do a comparison, but it's...
Oh, my God. I don't even remember that in the Boogaloos.
Yeah, there's a little animated character, and it's... Or not an animated character, but it's like a puppet character. Lidsville I have never liked, even though it's got Charles Nelson Reilly in it, who I do like. I always found it kind of like a bad ripoff of Puffin stuff, and the hat theme only goes so far, and it's, if you watch it now, it's very dated. There's the Chinese stereotype, there's the mentally challenged football helmet guy. It doesn't really hold up. But Sigmund and Sea Monsters still kind of does. I know that the big news is they're remaking it right now, with Amazon, which I'm curious to see what that's going to be. But it isn't. It's probably a nice departure from the formula, from the Puffin Stuff formula.
Well, it's just a nice. It's such a funny, you know. This tells you everything. The summing up of what this show is tells you everything you need to know about the show. There are these sea monsters, these goofy sea monsters, and Sigmund, the friendly one, essentially, who becomes friends with Johnny and Scott, and who doesn't he sort of talk like this? Hey, what's going on, Johnny and Scott? And he kind of has a weird blibbidoo tooth and everything.
Yeah, he's the goofiest of the sea monsters, right?
He gets kicked out. He gets kicked out of the family. Why? Because he refuses to scare people.
Little Casper.
And it's really quaint. It's like a little kid's book.
Yeah.
The little monster that couldn't scare or something. And he gets kicked out and then eventually, you know, makes friends with these guys. But he's always getting hassled by his two idiot brothers and their dad, wondering what he's up to, right?
That's a very rare show where it seemed to run two seasons, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Do you know who played Sigmund? And it was in the costume of Sigmund.
Was it Billy Barty?
It was. He was a Croft regular.
Billy Barty. Yeah. We'll get to him. We'll get to him more of him. Yeah, it was a weird show, but it was indicative of what they did. They did a live action thing, usually for a season, and it was part of the Saturday morning lineup. Instead of making a cartoon, like, you know, Filmation was down here doing nothing but animated series.
Well, they did live action too, but I think it was.
But they eventually got into live action, didn't they?
I think it was almost retaliation because Croft was kicking some butt.
Yeah, Croft was doing some big stuff.
And I love the Filmation live stuff too, but I mean, Croft definitely was an innovator there because it had kind of gone the way of the dinosaur by the late 60s.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned dinosaurs.
Yeah, because
that'll segue nicely into the next title. Which is Hill Street Blues.
Hill Street Blues. Let's be careful out there.
Let's be careful out there. No, the next title, which is a little show called Land of the Lost.
Yeah, and honestly, this was probably love at first sight for me. I did hide behind the couch at the Sleestaks, so it kind of challenged me as a kid.
Who was the guy, speaking of Sleestaks, wasn't there one guy that was like the leader that spoke?
Enoch.
And who played him?
You know what? That's a good question. Because
was that like James, you know, was that like that Asian actor that always did the... I feel like it was the guy that always did...
Not Key Luke.
It wasn't Key Luke?
No, he had a...
Are you sure?
I know what you're saying. Enoch had that voice. And you know what? I was watching a movie a few years ago.
Look it up.
And that actor was definitely in it. Walker Edmonston. And he has a... He's been passed away for about 7 years, but man, that is a resume in voice acting.
Wow! So you don't know what his face looks like?
No, I don't. But
I'm gonna look him up right now.
Sure. But yeah, Land of the Lost was also not. I mean, if you watch it now, you can see some of its faults and limitations, but it didn't try to dumb down for children. It had
it really did.
I think David Gerald wrote some episodes. Walter Koenig from Star Trek wrote some episodes.
Yep, that's right.
It was trying. Oh, you know who? Okay, that's where I recognize him from. The guy who voiced Enoch also did that classic Buck Rogers episode, The Dorian Secret, where everybody looks alike.
Oh,
they
God.
All have that voice.
I don't remember that.
Oh. I can totally put that together.
I'm trying to find a picture of him because he sounds a bit like Key Luke, doesn't he?
Yeah, but I don't think he's Asian.
Walker Edmiston. Mm-hmm. Edmiston. Huh. Well, he had a great voice.
He did. Like almost like that paging Mr. Herman, if that is not in fact him doing that.
And what is the gist of who the Sleestaks were? Can you remind us?
They were a race, and I boned up on this, but Enoch thinks he's a time traveler and that he's in the past. And then what he finds out is, I think in the, one of the first episodes that you see him, he's actually in the future. And his race has devolved into this kind of mutant category. They're not intelligent anymore.
They're now dinosaurs.
Well, no, not dinosaurs. The Enoch looks like them, but they're now...
I see.
They're now just, like, primitive. They're cave people, almost.
Right.
And then as the series progresses, I guess they wanted to add some more menace to them, so they start to talk. They start to get smart, but they're kind of still malevolent and evil. Enoch's the only one that's... Enoch's the only one that's level-headed, but he has no power with them. And I think after a while they start listening to a cave of skulls that tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of concepts there, and famously the biggest problem with the show is that Spencer Milligan, I believe his name was, the dad, he was apparently very upset with the merchandising and not getting a piece, and this has also, I think, caused the Dukes to leave. So he walked off the show, and they replaced him with Ron Harper from Planet of the Apes and
right.
Garrison's Gorillas. Was that the show he was on?
Don't know.
And a lot of people, I like the Uncle Jack season, but the show is starting to get a touch more cartoony. That's when the Sleestaks start to talk, and you know it doesn't quite have the same. The same synergy, I guess, as the first two seasons. And you know, I still think three seasons for a live action kids show is amazing in the 70s.
Oh yeah, you totally. Just a bit of trivia.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who else Walker Edmiston did the voice for?
No.
He did the voice for a little character called Baylock in Star Trek first season.
Clint Tranya.
Tranya. I love Tranya. He's
most unconvincing alien ever.
He does his voice.
Okay, so this guy's been around. I still say he's paging Mr. Herman, but
paging
I can't.
Mr. Herbert.
It's uncredited.
Paging Mr. Herbert.
Which everyone should do at least once into a loudspeaker.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, he's a legend.
Now, what did you think of the Land of the Lost? We can't... Okay, now, of course, the series got remade in 91. I was always disappointed to see all the action figures for it, mostly because I was in college at the time, and I thought, you know, where were these when I was a kid? So
yeah, they didn't look like the ones I remember, because they redid the show.
Yeah, the Sleestaks were now dinosaur people, and it just wasn't the same. But I just remember being kind of ticked off at all the toys that it got.
I'll tell you what comes to mind too about Land of the Lost, and I don't think I was too young to be thinking this. I think it was natural, you know. I knew what a cartoon was. I knew what it was to watch cartoons on Saturday morning. You know, the glossy looking animated shows were cartoons with bright colors and everything else. But then, you know, things like Rudolph, you know, the Rankin Bass stuff, and the stuff in Land of the Lost, I didn't understand what stop motion animation meant. You know, in fact, they never even really used that term like on television, really. So I'm watching it, having a real hard time figuring out how they moved these dinosaurs, because I know it's not animation. It doesn't look like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. So how did they do this? How did they get these things to move? Are they there on set? Is there somebody in an outfit? You know, did they move around? It was kind of jarring as a kid trying to figure out how they did this stuff. But I did watch it religiously. And I remember it being kind of slightly esoteric and a little more brainsy than the usual stuff.
Yeah, it was. It did challenge. Like I said, I felt it challenged me as a kid, and it tried to tell kind of more philosophical stories in the same way that the Filmation Star Trek did too.
That was a smart show.
Yeah. And yeah, Land of the Lost, very smart, and it haunted me as a kid. I missed it. Like if I saw at a friend's house, like the Land of the Lost board game, or any. If I found I found the ViewMasters when I was like 11, and I bought them because it was like, oh my god, I loved Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, I was pure nostalgia from day one. There.
Yeah, I'm not sure I found anything back then.
There is a bit of merchandise. There's actually quite a bit of rack toys, as I covered in the book. There's a great lunch pail. Ben Cooper not only did a Sleestak costume, which I really want, but they did a Sleestak Jiggler, which is the closest thing to an action figure we got in the 70s, and I own that. That was a happy day here. But yeah, it's not a vast thing. They never did comic books, but they did like Golden books and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, I don't know. It's almost like they didn't know what they had, but I mean, it would have been ripe for a comic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But yeah, there's a, if you want to collect Land of the Lost, it's kind of a fun little, collection to have, but it's not a huge collection by any means. I got to ask you what you thought of the, if you've seen it, the Will Ferrell remake.
Well, you know what's funny? My connection to that is, I forget who the woman was that, I don't know if we're still friendly with her, because she's, I think we are, because it may be the same person that we deal with now for a particular license. When that thing was going to hit, she had contacted me, this was years ago, and really, really sold it to me that this was going to be a massive, you know, action comedy on the level of Ghostbusters, and a lot of nostalgia for this show. We should do a master toy license, you know, and a whole range of merchandise and yada yada yada. And you know, we kind of played with it a little bit because we thought, is there a possibility? Is there that big of an audience for this? Can they make it really goofy and it's going to work? Everyone loves Will Ferrell. And we passed. We ended up passing on it because it just didn't. Again, with current stuff, when you're trying to get something to market when the thing hits or when the movie comes out and everything, it's a lot more difficult to do. And you're paying a lot of money for this stuff in hopes that the nostalgia factor is going to be there and people are going to show up for this movie. And we passed on it. So I was a little nervous at first, but then as the months wore on and more trailers came out and there was more disinterest, and then when the movie hit and made like $4, of course I felt just fine about what we'd done. But yeah. But having seen the film, you know, I'm kind of a sucker for Will Ferrell sometimes. I think he can kind of make something out of nothing sometimes. But I just thought it was just all over the place. Just didn't know what exactly it wanted to be. In homage to the original show, was it a complete parody? Is it going to be, you know, just like the old show but more comedy? You know, Chaka was ridiculous, like humping everything in sight.
Yeah, the thing I think when I first read about it on paper, I thought, oh, this could be a smash, because, and I said that about the Green Hornet too. So I'm not the brightest, but if they had just not played it so broad and looked for every opportunity, like they could have made an amazing family comedy with Will Ferrell, in the vein of those, what are those Journey to the Center of the Earth films they were making there?
That's true.
They could have brought in a family audience, had a lot of laughs, but they went, oh no, let's make this really, you know, let's try to make this more of a what you would call it, a gross out comedy a little bit, and it didn't work. It didn't, you know, I watched it, it was okay, there were some laughs in it, but I've never seen, you know, a movie with so much talent. Like, I really love Danny McBride, and Will Ferrell's great, just kind of miss.
Yeah.
It squandered them a bit.
Yeah, a bit. And you can sometimes tell when Ferrell doesn't want to be there.
Yep.
When he's kind of, you know, phoning it in, so to speak. And that's kind of...
Well, you know, he's not given a lot to do, and I think that was the problem. They could have even kept its plot. They could have even kept its plot and still made it interesting. But it just didn't work. So, and it just... The audience, by not bringing in families, I think you kind of screwed yourself, because then you're just at the mercy of the 20-something public who have no nostalgia for this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So now we move on to two that are very similar shows, I think. But they must have been, what, a year apart maybe? Which is the Far Out Space Nuts, which was Chuck McCann and Bob Denver.
Yes.
Working for NASA.
which is absolutely one of my favorites, and I don't know why, but I loved this show as a kid, and I still kind of like it now. I mean, it's not great, but
aren't they like filling the food machines or something?
It is the famous lunch. Launch, you know. I said lunch, that's not launch.
Lunch, not launch.
Yeah, and somehow they just don't die. They go all over space.
Yeah, they go all over space.
And it's done on an incredible shoestring budget, too.
Yeah, and I love how they get, like, Chuck McCann, but like who did a lot of voiceover stuff, but they get Bob Denver, who at that point was so in syndication.
Yeah,
he was,
and it freaked me out why he was gray.
He was like a big star to be on this show.
Well, except that he wasn't, because like a lot of these folks that were on these shows, they were kind of in career lulls, you know? And I've always wondered with Chuck McCann, because, I mean, Bob Denver didn't get any syndication money.
Oh, so, okay.
You know, he wasn't exactly rolling in it. But with Far Out Space Nuts, I've always wondered if they tried to get Alan Hale Jr. Couldn't.
And got Chuck McCann?
Chuck McCann, who's actually probably more comedically talented.
I'll bet that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, because he, you know, he kind of fills that role. But Chuck McCann himself is actually a great children's entertainer and did, you know, he's still alive, by the way.
Yeah, he still does.
Facebook friends.
Still does VO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And The Lost Saucer, that's Ruth Buzzy and Jim Nabors. It's you're right. It is pretty similar to the Far Out Space Nuts. They're robots though.
They're robots, and they have an animal with them called a Dorse.
A Dorse,
which is half dog, half horse.
Now the, right? the Far Out Space Nuts also had an animal.
Oh yeah, what was that thing?
It had like honker or oh, now I gotta know.
And it was like a puppet.
It was a guy in a suit, and what is it? Honk. I was right, Honk.
So it's a guy in a suit and he had a honk nose?
Yeah, you think he had horns. You know, I just watched this.
How did they get him? How'd they find that guy?
I have no idea.
No,
I think it's actually in the credits, like it runs in the vehicle in the credits.
And they pick him up and they start...
Yeah, then they go on their wacky adventures.
Wow.
Because, you know, nobody can fly a spaceship through outer space like two cafeteria workers.
Yeah, what people don't realize is Far Out Space Nuts was a documentary.
Yes.
And it was
true to life.
In real time.
I've always thought that because on Mystery Science Theater, Joel Hodgson would occasionally say that I said lunch, not launch joke.
Yeah.
And the whole... jumpsuit look of Joel Robinson. I've always thought he had a little Far Out Space Nuts in there.
Probably. It's just the kind of thing he would be obsessed with or he'd know about.
Yeah. So that's definitely one of my favorites. Far Out Space Nuts, Lost Saucer, I definitely watched a lot of.
Wait, the Donnie and Marie show was a Croft show?
It was a Croft presentation, sir.
The Donnie and Marie show that aired on like Saturday.
My older sister held me down and watched. It wasn't Saturday morning.
No,
it was
Saturday,
a primetime show.
Primetime, yeah. Friday night, whatever it was.
Yeah, and that's when that's the fascinating chapter in the Croft world is not their Saturday morning stuff so much as some of their variety shows. Now Donnie and Marie was a huge hit for them. And how many, I don't even know how long that lasted.
Well, that had to go from 76 to like 80 at least.
That long?
Because they made...
Yeah, 76 to 79. Wow.
Yeah, because they made that movie, like, in 1980, like, you know, Going
Coconuts?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've got the Criterion Blu-ray of.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's the one where they actually get it on, I think.
That's the one in your head. The Donnie and Marie show, they were everywhere in the late 70s. I was... not really a fan of that show as a kid, or its many imitators, but my sister sure liked that stuff.
Yeah, kids were into it, though.
And we had our own version of Donnie and Marie in Canada. We had the Rennie Simard show.
I'm sure it was very similar.
It was poorly done, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, moving on, the thing I absolutely adore about Sid and Marty Krofft is the Krofft Super Show, which had two seasons and then it got reworked. But it was hosted by Captain Cool and the Kongs.
Oh, my God.
Do you remember them?
If ever there was a concept, I think I said this before, if ever there was a concept on paper to costume to in front of the camera that was dated before they opened their mouths.
Bang, dated, yeah.
It was Captain Cool and the Kongs.
And when they updated their look, it was like, you know, the minute they came out in those disco outfits, disco was dead.
Disco was dead. They come out in the glam thing. Glam is already dead by 76. You know, they're doing like a glam kind of slightly hippie-ish also, though.
Yeah, and I always they released a record, eh?
Yeah, they had a comic book too, didn't they?
I have one of the comic books here. Yeah, the Krofft Super Show got a lot of merchandise. It got a lot of heat for some reason.
But Captain Cool and the Kongs, I mean, on the Krofft Super Show, you had Captain Cool and the Kongs. You had Electra Woman and Dinah Girl.
That's the first season. Yes.
You had Dr. Shrinker.
Also the first season.
And you had Wonderbug.
Yeah, and I think that's the first season.
So
yes.
These were like 10 or 12 minute little stories that rotated throughout the hour.
That's correct. Yeah.
And they were, you know, told in chapters, just like you would, you know, the old serials and stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, all those shows. Dr. Shrinker has got the way underutilized Jay Robinson as Dr. Shrinker.
Hello, Hugo.
Yeah, a guy that, you know, through his own bad behavior kind of got blacklisted.
Really? Was he a jerk or did he just...
He's a junkie.
Was he?
Yeah, in the 50s, yeah.
Well, I didn't know that.
And it took him a long time to clean up, and then he just, you know, he ended up on... I mean, he was very loyal to the Krofts. He appears in a lot of stuff. And then, you know, of course, he's in a classic Star Trek, and...
Oh, yeah.
He's on a Buck Rogers... He got around, but he really did have to crawl his way back up through Hollywood.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he got caught with methadone.
Really?
Yeah. So
that's a big deal.
Cleaned up, and it was a huge deal. Like that was he had played Caligula, in the 50s, and I think that he thought he was going places as an actor, and then he kind of did that, and he's kind of. You know, I think he could have been the next kind of Vincent Price, in terms of his, you know, his acting style and his persona.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then Electra Woman and Dinah Girl was the show that I, as a child, didn't know why I liked so much, but could not look away.
It was hard to look away, wasn't it?
It was just like I like this. I don't what's going on. And it's got Deirdre Hall, who's the Marlena from Days of Our Lives, and as I learned in college. Judy Strangis, who was just absolutely adorable. And then they had their helper in the basement, Frank, who was played by Norman Alden. There's another voice guy you must know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Aquaman.
Aquaman and loads of other...
Yeah.
Loads of other characters he did in animation. Can we just have to jump back real quick because I'm looking something up here to Dr. Shrinker.
Okay.
And this will tie into something here. I am, you know, a couple of years out here in L.A. and I fall into a job this is going back 96, 97, something like that. This network is going to launch. That it's going to compete with E basically and needs content for premieres and, you know, stories. You know, I'm editing stories together with EPKs that we get and stuff. And this is pre-internet and all that jazz, going out and doing man on the street pieces, going to junkets, doing red carpet stuff. And the company that I'm working at, and I forget the name of the company, but one of the guys that's, you know, the head of the company is a guy called Ted Eccles. And he'd walk around, you'd say hi to him and stuff, and he was nice enough, and, you know, and then eventually, you know, the place was catered every day. I'll never forget this. This place was catered. You'd get food every day for lunch if you were in there for lunch. And there'd be pictures of him up on the wall as like a little kid and then a child actor and then other things, you know. And I suddenly turned my head and go, oh, he was an actor. He must have. And some guy's like, yeah, don't you know, Ted was a big actor. He did a lot of stuff. He, you know, All My Children, this and that. And then I look over and it's a shot of him from Dr. Shrinker. He was the blonde dude in Dr. Shrinker.
No kidding.
No. And I thought, do I say something to the guy? But it just was one of those moments of just like the world just stops for 5 seconds and you go, oh my God, you're standing out here. The little kid watching the television, there's that blonde guy. And suddenly I'm standing next to him getting food in a line here. And it was just surreal. It just was like, I could say something to him, but is he going to care? But it's just, it's weird enough that it's here. Now he owns this company or whatever. And that's a million years ago, you know, like I was 5 or 6 and now I'm, you know, older and here I am doing this. And I don't know whatever happened to the company because the thing went under like 6 months later, but I don't know what happened to that guy or what he's up to, but that's what he was doing he was doing 20 years after Dr. Shrinker.
That's hilarious.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it wouldn't be easy to remember everyone you saw as a kid on TV, so that's kind of funny when you made that connection.
Well, I looked at the picture, and I was like, oh, my God, that's him. That's the guy, Dr. Shrinker. Because I remember there was like a chubby guy and a woman and this blonde guy. They were the three shrinkettes or whatever.
Yeah, the shrinkies.
The shrinkies.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what they're referred to. That's what they're referred to in the show.
I got really excited when I found there were rack toys for Dr. Shrinker, and they're things like a magnifying glass.
Stuff that makes sense
because a lot of rack toys from the company Harmony are kind of weird, and these were all like, wow, someone thought about this.
Right, this actually makes sense.
Yeah, and I was more excited than I should have been. I own a few Dr. Shrinker items, and there is of course a Halloween costume of Dr. Shrinker, which I don't know what kid put on, but I kind of want it.
I just imagine the kid putting that on and walking around with some, like, you know, the kid that goes all the way, puts that costume on, and then carries around like some Fisher Price adventure people.
Or Migos.
As he goes out for Halloween. Or Migos. Would have been the right size, yeah. And really, really gets method about it.
Goes right to town, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm, we were talking about Electro Woman and Dinah Girl. I love this show too because of all the slumming, like I was watching one with my daughter last night, and Sid Haig pops up as a genie.
Sid Haig, who had the weirdest beginnings, he never should have been in kids' television.
No, but you know, he sure did pop up in a lot of it.
All the blaxploitation stuff that he did, he shows up in a lot of kids' television because he looks like a bad guy.
I was just watching him in a Russ Hagen movie called Wonder Women.
Oh boy!
A couple weeks ago, also with my daughter. I should probably not let her watch some of this stuff.
Probably. Just seeing Sid Haig's face. But then, you know, if you look at him in the Jason of Star Command, like extras stuff, he talks about how, boy, he gets more people stopping him at shows talking about Jason of Star Command than anything else he's done.
Yeah, and, you know, he mentioned in an interview in Psychotronic how much he was happy with it because at the time, Saturday morning shows didn't pay you residuals. They just paid you up front for how many airings they were going to have.
Oh.
So you were like, you know, here's your check for doing it, and here are your residuals. So he says Jason of Star Command saved his house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he's not embarrassed to talk about it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool to hear. Unlike some people. Yeah. All right, take me higher. Where are we going
next?
Take
you higher? Well, we're going to go to the second season of the Croft Super Show, which they flushed everybody out of. All the shows got changed. And they added a feature called, well, did we talk about Wonderbug at all?
We didn't. And if we were going to talk about it, all I would say would be, It to me was like a live action version of Speed Buggy.
I loved Speed Buggy, so I loved Wonder Bug.
Wasn't
It's got a little Shazam in there.
Wasn't Mark Hamill one of the voices on Speed Buggy?
Yes, he was. Yeah,
I think he was. And Genie, he was.
Yeah, that's right.
The Yabble Dabble, that guy, that Genie show. He was a voice on that. Yeah. That's
something he probably doesn't talk about much.
Probably not.
Wonderbug had a neat little component to it. I loved it. It was very campy. Basically the same episode every week. But there, also, I was watching one on TV and it, or on the DVD, and Uncle Leo was in it.
I saw that. I saw that clip, the one you put up.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Uncle Leo.
And then, what was it? They made a ton of Wonderbug merchandise too. They made Wonderbug cars. They made a big Ride-Em car. So then they switched next year, and I don't think Wonderbug made it into the Croft Super Show again. It's very strange.
I think he OD'd.
Yeah, it's very sad. The Magic Mongo was the new addition, and that was basically a remake of Genie with veteran voice guy Lenny Weinrib, who did a ton of work for the Crofts.
Oh yeah, lots of
playing Mongo. And the other addition that year was Bigfoot and Wild Boy, which is very much a mishmash of pop culture. It's got basically, without, you know, it's a wink wink, nudge nudge, bionic Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And then they've kind of added the, you know, like Lucan and that Wolf Boy kind of thing, and they, I think the actor's name was Joseph Butcher.
Was he the kid that was cousin what you call on Brady Bunch?
No, cousin Oliver.
Was he cousin Oliver on Brady?
No, that's Robbie Reed.
Oh, okay.
Not Robbie Reed. Robbie Rist.
Sorry,
I didn't know I'd have to talk about this.
Sorry, but I'm testing you, making sure that you know it.
You want to make sure I'm not a duplicate.
That's right.
Yeah.
Only the real Brian would know these answers.
That's right, because no one else should.
No one else should.
Bigfoot and Wild Boy really didn't have much of a backstory, except that Bigfoot adopted this kid he found in the woods, and they fought crime. It's funny, I was watching that with my daughter last night, and that was the one she tapped out on. I love that show, by the way. I love the idea of it. It's very cheap, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah,
she actually said at one point, "Why did they even try?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Well, they can't do this. Why are they even trying to do this?"
That's brilliant, though. Think of the way her mind is working. That's brilliant. That goes on the packaging, for God's sake. That goes on the packaging. Why did they bother? They can't do it. They don't have the budget for it, so why are they trying?
It's brilliant.
The thing is, what you tell her, you know, you couldn't make Bigfoot and Wild Boy today because Child Services would have gotten involved.
Well, it's obvious that Bigfoot come over knows that where a Bigfoot,
a Bigfoot cannot raise a young boy.
That's right. It would be a poignant 2-hour lifetime movie.
Right. He'd have to, like, you'd see Bigfoot trying to enroll the kid in, like, grade school, junior high. Bigfoot's getting made fun of because he can't fill out the forms.
Him running slow motion towards the courtroom.
Yeah. Wearing a tie.
And then he just kind of yells, "Wild Boy!"
Yeah, and the judge goes, "Give him his boy."
Yeah.
You know, what are we doing? You're going to deprive these
By the way, his boy is about 28. So,
yeah.
You know, it says, you know, 8 years ago he raised a boy, so a college kid got lost in the woods. But I'm not sure, you know. I think Joseph Butcher is supposed to be pulling off.
He probably was 16. On an acid trip or something.
Yeah, well, that seems to be the running theme.
Yeah. What else you got?
Well, then we go up to the next thing we're talking about is the Brady Bunch Hour.
The Brady Bunch. They had like a variety show.
Yeah, the Razzle Dazzle variety show, which has been parodied a million times. They actually released the damn thing on DVD. I remember it as a kid, and I remember being like 7 years old watching that going, "This is horrible. Like, I'm embarrassed for everybody."
Yeah, but I don't even... I mean, I'm not sure I've ever even seen it. I think I've seen bits of it. Like, you know...
I just remember watching it, turning it on as a kid, and Mr. Brady says something to Carol, like, "Oh, can't we just make up?" And she yelled, "Make up!" and hit him with that makeup thing that Sesame Street rejected doing.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and it was just... It was just a... When you're 7 years old and you go, "This is crap."
You know, you've been let down.
Yeah, it's probably been crap. And, you know, it just goes to show you that the Brady Bunch refused to die in syndication.
It was massive. And they had a cartoon, too, didn't they?
They did, the Brady Kids. Yeah.
Jeez, I mean, I never liked that show. I never watched it.
I wasn't a big fan either.
But people seem to freaking love it.
Yeah, as you know, even though I run a site about the 70s and I talk about it, it's not hugely ingrained in me. You know?
Well, yeah, but it's like, I mean, you guys like you and I would probably spend more time watching Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, big, huge fan.
Reruns than Brady Bunch.
That's true. Although, I mean, I'd probably watch anything that was put forward to me. Maybe that Brady Bunch wasn't on. Like, I only got a few channels as a kid, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah, too. Maybe.
Like, I don't have a big 66 Batman love either because I saw it like three times as a kid.
Can we get to Pink Lady and Jeff now that we've talked about it in the Brady Bunch Hour?
Yeah, okay, and then we'll go back to the Croft Superstar Hour because I want to play with that. But Pink Lady and Jeff, I think if anyone doesn't know what it is, there was a Japanese singing group?
Yes, called Pink Lady. Lady.
Who couldn't act their... Basically, their English was bad. Yep. Yeah. So they put... What's his name? Jeff Altman?
Jeff Altman.
Who played the Weather Wizard in the Legends of the Superheroes.
And has been a stand-up and a friend of Letterman's for 40 years.
Yeah, he's probably a great stand-up
around the world.
So the Crofts threw him under the bus
as the comedy bit of this show, this Pink Lady and Jeff. And I remember watching it when it was on. I remember watching it when it aired, and it became a punchline for the next 20 years as like, you know, a Hello Larry or something like Pink Lady and Jeff, like one of the worst shows ever made that made it to the airwaves.
Hey, everybody. Not unlike the dad on Land of the Lost, I have lost Jason to a pylon, meaning that his net went down at his house and there's nothing we can do about it. So I guess we're going to have to tie this one up by saying this is end of part one. So if there is a good news in this, there will be a part two to the Sid and Marty Croft discussion, which is something I'm more than happy to accommodate. So we're cutting it early tonight. I apologize. Thank you for all your kind words, feedback, things you write on the Facebook page. Please keep it up. We love interacting with you. And I'll see you again next month. Take care.